Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with truly interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They have wonderful stories to share, and they are here on this podcast to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are here to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. Excuse me. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to, and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today is a big one. We're hearing an awful lot about millennials. So we're talking with Aaron Levy, Engaging Your Millennials. And I suspect I just said your name wrong, Aaron. Is it? And you just told me, Levy or Levy, which is it?
It's Levy. No worries, though.
Levy. I'm sorry. And I knew that, and right as soon as it came out of my mouth, I went, well, darn, but here we go. So Aaron Levy is the founder and CEO of Raise the Bar, a firm focused on helping companies retain their millennial talent. He is an ICF Associate Certified Coach, a Thrive Global Contributor, an 1871 mentor, the co-director of Startup Grind Chicago, and a member of the Forbes Coaches Council. So those are some pretty impressive credentials, if you will. He has educated, coached, and consulted with over 5,500 business leaders, helping them to define goals, create action plans, and achieve sustained success. Aaron is on a mission to transform the manager role by empowering each manager with the habits to be better leaders of people. Good morning, Aaron. Welcome to your Partner in Success. And I'm sorry I mangled your name. I have one of those names, too. Nobody can read, spell, or pronounce Griffiths, and I just did it to you. So I am so sorry.
No worries. It happens so often. Like you said, it's not a point of offense for me.
I'm the oldest of several kids, and we started out with three girls and then continued the trend. But my mother named us Denise, Diane, and Debbie. She never could figure out which. She'd say, Denise, Diane, darn it, you know who you are. So I answered all three, seriously. No clue which one I am.
Shame in my family, we're Ari, Adam, and Aaron.
There you go. Same thing. Listen, we're talking today about a really important topic, millennials. I mean, love them, hate them. You know, sometimes you can deal with them. Sometimes you can't. The fact is that they're different. They think differently. They have been raised differently. And there are ways to deal with them or work with them or even, you know, help them. But I think it's a little trickier than most people believe. So before we get started, Aaron, tell people a bit about yourself and how you came to even talk about this topic. Because it can be a touchy one, can't it?
Yeah, and I'll take us maybe a couple steps back. Before we even got into the millennial topic, I've just been constantly and consistently for most of my life curious about this question of why, as human beings, when we know something better to do, we don't actually do it. Like, why is there this gap between knowledge and action? And why do we have the word should in our lives? It's like, I should do this, I ought to do this, but we're not actually doing it. And it's the same reason why, you know, we only achieve 8% of our New Year's resolutions, or 8% of us only achieve our New Year's resolutions. And that's always fascinated me. And I've been curious as to why. And so I spent the early part of my career studying the science of why does this happen? Why do people do what they do? How do we move from knowledge to action? And I looked at, you know, all the different research and science, but then I was fortunate enough to be able to work with thousands upon thousands of individuals to understand what works in a year-long coaching program, what works in lunch and learns, what works in webinars, what works in week-long trainings and workshops, and what doesn't work. And somebody was asking me the other day, how'd you figure all this out? I said, I failed a lot and learned a lot from my failures. And so in that, I discovered two things. One is what actually works to trigger change in someone's life. How do you do that more rapidly, more effectively, more efficiently? And then two, I learned that I love helping people do that. I love helping people unlock their potential. That's what I'm here for. That's what excites me. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And why, you know, I'm excited to talk about it on a daily basis and be a part of it. And so as I noticed that, I realized and started to look around me and saw that all of my friends, as a millennial myself, all my friends were jumping from job to job to job. I had one friend that the day he got a promotion, he quit his job. Another friend who was making a very, very good living, a couple $100,000, and he had was working with best friends, and he had a, you know, all the things you could think about in a cool office, and he quit. You know, and this was, these weren't just random instances. This was happening all around me. And so I got really curious and started to ask, what's going on here? As a coach, I started to get curious, why is this happening? And after interviewing and talking and learning from as many people as I could, I realized that this turnover is a sign of dissatisfaction, is a yearning for purpose, is a yearning for connection, a yearning for personal growth and development. And I realized that what companies are doing isn't properly addressing it in a way that's going to make a powerful impact in the individual or the company. And so that's really what got me to this topic, was just noticing that there's this problem and noticing how it's such a miss in terms of people living into their full potential. And I said, that is, if I'm about helping people live into their full potential, then this is the best and biggest and most important opportunity that we could go after as a business, that I could go after.
So were you able to find out in all your studying, and I'm sure it's still going on, why they're unfulfilled, why they have this yearning? What is that? Is it part of their childhood? Is it, you know, maybe the fact that they were attached to their machines rather than family? What's going on there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things here. One, it's just a changing in the world of work. We're no longer in a working economy. We're no longer in the Industrial Revolution, right? And we haven't been for 40, 50 years, and yet we still act like that. So what we act is, we still have this 9-to-5 mentality. 9-to-5 came from the labor union saying that we're going to work at the factory from 9-to-5 to have a sane amount of work time. And we still have that mentality, even though the type of work we're doing is no longer go in, watch and stand in the assembly line and make sure this widget is appropriately sized and doesn't have any defects. We're doing much more creative, thoughtful, innovative work where we need to not just know our part of the process, but know the end goal and the end result so that we can deliver the results in a true, meaningful way for our clients, for our teams, for whoever needs it. And so one of the reasons that we're seeing this difference in the millennial generation is, yes, they're a different generation. I can explain why in a minute, but also it's time that the world of work is changing. And so the expectations in the workplace and the type of things that we need from our workplace to be able to provide high quality work is different than the way we've traditionally done it over the last 120 years.
I'm not a millennial,
yeah.
But you know, I am with them on this. You have to be in an office from 9-to-5. I briefly had a job while I was going back to college, and I was working two jobs during the day and going to college at night. About half killed myself, but it was really worth it. But my last job, because I've always owned my own business of one description or another, was in an insurance company. And it's a good thing I wasn't armed with any kind of letter opener or anything, because it was the most tedious, boring, stodgy. It was just incredible. And I could have done the work in probably half the time. Done it, you know, with joy. Here you go. Everything's done. I'm going now. But the man who owned the company had this nasty habit of popping up behind our desk and just peering at us to see if we were playing solitaire half the time we were, because we didn't need 8 hours. We did not. And he never worked that out. It was crazy.
And it's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
No.
It's not efficient. It's not a good use of time. And if someone finishes their work in a shorter amount of time, great. Or challenge them and give them other things that will stimulate their mind and stimulate
exactly.
their work and stimulate their development.
Never
so
happened.
I think that's one of the reasons. And I think you kind of mentioned one of the other reasons is millennials are just they're a different generation. We grew up with different, what I call inciting incidents that happened. Right? There was 9/11 when we were growing up. There was the stock market crash and the housing market crash that when we came out of college, there were no jobs. And the jobs that our parents had for years and years and years, they were gone. And their pensions were gone. You know, just all of those, the world in which we grew up in was just a little bit different. You know, seatbelts came in the 80s. There were no seatbelts before that, right? These, I was talking to my wife about it the other day. You can't just let your child go to the park without anybody watching them. The world itself is different, and so that's had an impact on the millennial generation. They're a different generation, just as much as the Gen Xers are a different generation and the boomers are a different generation. Boomers saw work as a career, and millennials see work as a calling. Just slight difference in that.
What do you mean by calling? Explain that, because I think I know what you're talking about. I've had several conversations with millennial experts, and I have a feeling I know where you're going, but our audience may not. So can you dive a
yeah.
little bit deeper into that?
Yeah, when I look for work and speak about work as a calling, it resonates deeply with who I am. It's not just a job. It's more than a job. I care about it. I don't just go there to get a paycheck. I go there because I care about the work that we're doing in a powerful and meaningful way. And it's like my life's work. And that's what a calling is. And so not every millennial has that, right? One of the reasons people jump from job to job to job. Not every millennial is clear on what that is for them. But we're all looking for that. We're all looking for work to be a calling, not work to just be paycheck, or even a career that we build up, right? Where boomers
right.
can build up a career, get a gold watch, and have that community, and that's great. And I think millennials strive for that more than a job, but they strive even more than that for it to be a calling, for it to resonate with them on so many more levels than just the work level.
And see, I don't have any argument with that, because a job, which you can probably tell, has never suited me. I get bored, I feel very constrained, I get claustrophobic, and then I get very irritable. It's just not for me. My personality really doesn't cope well with, you know, being kind of constrained like that. But here's the thing, if you're going to work every day for just a paycheck, that's the biggest part of your waking hours. Oh my God, how awful is that? I mean, if you can't be part of the solutions, the answers, the questions, why in the world are you walking through that door?
Well, those are the questions that, you know, because the nature of that question used to be asked 20, 30 years into the workplace, because you went to high school, to get a good job, or to go to college. You went to college to get a good job. You had a good job, and then society didn't really have any expectations for you after that, right, besides for buying a house, having kids, right, doing some of those things. But you picked your head up 20 years after, 30 years after, and you say, what's this about? Why is this important to me? What am I here for? And that was traditionally the quarter life or the midlife crisis. But now, because we have such a need for instant gratification, not just millennials, but everybody, right? Our need is at an all-time high. Like, I'm talking to you on my cell phone and we're talking live on a rate. It's just, there's so many different ways in which we don't have to wait for what we want anymore. I don't have to wait for food to be delivered to my house, or groceries, or the television, I can watch whatever I want, that it's created this urgency for not waiting. And so that question that you said is, what am I doing here, is happening in their 20s instead of in their 40s or 50s. And that's what's causing what I call a quarter-life crisis.
You know, I never thought of it like that, or even a midlife crisis. I mean, you know, the midlife crisis is the joke. You know, all of a sudden, and it's always the poor men that get picked on. All of a sudden, you know, he's pictured as, or portrayed as, you know, all of a sudden losing weight. He's going to the gym. He's got a new haircut, or even a new hair color. He's driving the typical red Corvette. you know, you don't. I don't know why we don't talk about men having those, you know, same crises, but I never put the two and two together, you know, that you're just unhappy. You're unhappy in your work, and it bleeds over into everything else because it is what you do all day. I'll be darned. Never thought of it. So
yeah, it's what
quarter life. So I just had another thought. So quarter life, and I have to ask you, I have to mute us so I don't cough on you. Can you hear me coughing? I need to make sure you don't.
No, I can't. You're good.
Okay, good. If you hear that little beep, that's me muting just to be polite. Okay, so you mentioned quarter life. So about 25, is that when people go, this is just not for me. I've got my degree. I'm doing, you know, the things that I kind of, the path has been laid out for me. It's just not working for me. So it's happening at two different levels, I take it.
It's just happening more earlier on. So it could happen at 25. It could happen at 23. It could happen at 27 or in your early mid-30s. But there's no exact date. But the question that's starting to be asked is, why am I doing the work I'm doing? Why am I here? What's important to me? What do I care about? And it's this yearning for purpose and impact. And if I don't have
okay,
it here, then let me go find it somewhere else.
Right, right. And I have a question, and this has always been, you know, when there was a day when I would write resumes for people because I'm a pretty good technical writer, and there were two things that employers, this wasn't all that long ago, if there was a big gap in your employment, say you were homeschooling your children or you were a housewife or you just were out of the real job market for some reason, or if you had, you know, you were leaping job to job to job to job, those were considered two things that employers just went, oh, and they red flagged them. But with millennials, they're leaving jobs at, you know, record numbers, and that doesn't appear to be a problem anymore, is it? I think people will go, okay, why did you leave this one? Why did you leave that one? But it doesn't seem to hold the stigma that it used to. Is that correct, or am I just thinking that?
Absolutely. And it's also like you don't have too many other choices. The labor market is so low, right? There's not that much. There's a war for talent. And so it's not like you have the choice to say, oh, well, why'd you jump from this job to this job? And by the way, everybody's doing it anyway. So the pickings that you have of people that stayed at companies 4 or 5 years, it's just not likely. Millennials are turning over roughly every 18 months. So it's just going to be that way.
And employers now are thinking, okay, from an employer standpoint, are they looking at this person across the desk and saying, okay, I've got you for roughly 2 years, if I'm lucky. What do I do with you?
Some employers are doing that. Some employers are thinking about, okay, how can I, you know, the people who are getting ahead of the game are thinking about what's this problem and what in how we engage with our talent, how we engage with our people can appropriately address this.
And I would think that would be the smarter thing to say, okay, I see that you've been unhappy at your last 3, 4, or 5 companies. What can we do to retain your interest, engage you, get you dialed in, dialed up, and actually contributing? So what are companies missing when they, you know, they may have the thought, okay, we're going to keep this guy, he's really great, but then, you know, a year in, they're thinking, I don't think we're going to be able to keep him. What are they missing when they're not working directly with millennials to see where their strengths are, I guess? I mean, that's the only thing that comes to me.
So the myth is, I think a lot of people are getting clear on the millennial generation and their desire for these three things. They want purpose in the work that they're doing. They want it to know that they're having impact. They want to feel connected to their team, to their company, to their boss. The way companies think about it is they want recognition. I call it connection because it's a deeper level than just recognition. And they want to feel like they're growing and developing. Now, where companies are missing is what they're doing is they're throwing at extrinsic, so external things to motivate those people. They're saying, hey, you can go to this conference or you can have this budget to do learning and development for yourself. or we're going to give you an online tool so you can learn, or I was reading, you know, I read all the time, company tries to solve employee engagement issues with an app that does recognition and measures employee engagement and gives people virtual high fives. And those things are all extrinsic. And they're usually pretty universal. Or we'll give you free LaCroix and beer on tap and a beautiful office space. And again, those things are all extrinsic. No one comes into work 6 months into their job and says, I can't wait to do a great job today because I'm going to get free beer. It's just not why we come to work. And so where companies miss is that they don't realize the biggest influence and impact on an employee's perception of their purpose, perception of their ability to grow and the company's caring of their growth and their connection is their boss. And most bosses they're not good. Most bosses suck. And they suck because they're promoted because they're good at what they do. They're good at being top individual contributors, but not because they have the tools and skills to lead people. And it's a very different skill set to lead versus doing. And we throw people into those positions and we don't give them the skills to lead. And that's a big gap, a really big gap. And the companies that are figuring out are realizing that it's not just the toolkit that we need to give them, but we actually need to help them develop the skills for interacting with their entire population, millennial or boomer or Gen Xer.
If I'm interpreting this correctly, bosses, and I agree with you, some bosses are just, oh my gosh, go sit in the corner, don't talk to me anymore. But if I'm reading this correctly, it seems like leaders should be more mentors than, you know, hey, go do this and do that, and by the way, here's your free beer. You know, I think we all need mentors. In fact, I know we all need mentors at one time or another, or multiple times, multiple mentors. So does that make sense that, you know, the bosses go, look, you know, I'm going to sit down with you, I'm going to listen to you, and I've got a little bit of guidance if you're willing to listen to it, and then let's see where this goes.
It comes down to the fundamental question of what do you believe the role of a people manager or a leader in the organization is? Is it to task manage, or is it to ensure that everybody and empower everybody on your team to be as successful as possible? Because if that's the belief, then if you help them be as successful as possible, not worry about them being better than you, but help them be as successful as possible, what you're doing is you're and thus enabling yourself to be as successful as possible because you're creating the most powerful, impactful team. We look very short-sighted at this problem, right? I'm not saying like let's coddle each other, but as you said, mentorship is really important so that people can learn how to do better and learn, just in the intro of your podcast, rapidly learn from other people's
right.
mistakes so that I don't have to make the same mistake.
Right. As we were talking in the green room, you said something just really important about empowering your people. We were chatting in the green room about me firing my yard crew yesterday. And, you know, I've been working with this guy for a couple of years. He started out, he's a young guy, he's a millennial. He started out as just him. And then he started growing, built his website, did his social media. And, you know, he's a really nice guy. But he made the mistake of once he started growing of chasing the dollars, as far as I can tell. And my yard is not complicated. It really isn't. You know, I do have some couple pieces of lawn furniture. They pick them up. They throw them around. They never put them back where they were supposed to be. You know, and seriously, his crew gets here. I timed them yesterday. They were here for 19 minutes. Front and back. That's unconscionable. You know, and his excuse is, well, you know, your back in the backyard was so bad, I went out and took pictures of it. And he said, well, you know, we can't get a big riding lawnmower through your gate because the gate's too narrow, so we have to use a push mower. Well, this is not news. It's always been that way. My gripe was, and I made him come back and weed eat the whole thing. It was so awful. It didn't even smell like grass. All they did was shave off the top of the dandelions. But I said, listen, you know, your customer service is good because if I have an issue or a question, you always call me back or text, and I really appreciate that. Your customer experience is awful. And I'm going to tell you what my observation is. You have not empowered your crew to before they walk out that gate and close it to turn around and say, did I do a good job? How does this look? they did a garbage job. It's the worst I've ever seen. And, you know, he was full of excuses, and I just said, okay, we're done. You know, I get that the gate is not wide enough. I get that they're on a time, but what you've done in chasing those dollars is that you've got them on such a tight schedule that they don't dare turn their head around to see if they didn't even pick up the hose. They weed-eated around it. That is not a good job, but it's not him. Well, it is him. He is not giving them permission to say, hey, we need to spend an extra 15 minutes here, guys. You know, they're on such a tight schedule. So he lost my business permanently. And I think that is incredibly short-sighted. So that's my rant. I'm over it. But he's chasing the dollars, and he's not empowering his crew at all. And then he wonders why he has this constant turnover, because he's getting complaints all the time. They have to double back. That's money they don't earn because, you know, they have to do so many yards a day. He's biting himself right in the butt. What do you think?
Yeah, and that happens. And that happens within businesses. That happens within teams. You know, it's unfortunate. It's the types of companies I work with are the ones that realize, hey, our people are our biggest cost, but that also means they're our biggest opportunity and their biggest asset. And so I'm willing to invest and do the work and spend the time to develop those people, because those people are the people that will be the drivers and the growth of our company.
Exactly. And he may learn this over time. I hope he does, because he's a really nice guy. But he's making some organizational mistakes as far as I can see, and he's not going to listen. So these are lessons he'll have to learn when they hit him in the pocketbook, I'm afraid. Okay, so let's go back a little bit, because we mentioned this at the top of the show, and I think this is a big curiosity factor for a lot of people who look at millennials and go, what in the heck are they thinking? So why are millennials truly different from the rest of us?
You know, I think they're not. I think, you know, for a variety
really?
Of reasons that we talked about at the start of the show, they're a part of a changing workplace. They're a part of a different type of world that we live in, where we have this on-demand nature to everything, right? There's no off. There's no off button. There's no waiting in lines. There's push a button and you get what you need. So there's this kind of on-demand, high need for instant gratification. So, and that's not unique to millennials. That's everybody. That's, you know, people who are boomers and Gen Xers. I see them on their phone, or their phone's out in the middle of a meeting, and an alert comes in about anything, right? A news alert, an email alert, a text message, or they're checking their wrists. That is not just unique to millennials. And millennials are coming into their prime in the workforce amongst this, amidst this, so it'll appear that way. And yes, they're different from this kind of overarching perspective of, they were born at a different time, they were raised in a different time, and so they lean more towards calling, towards purpose, towards impact, and they expect that from the workplace more than other generations have. And when you asked me the question, I said no, because we're all human beings. We all want purpose in our lives. We all want connection. We all want to feel like we're growing and developing. The difference in millennials is they're expecting that from the workplace, and other generations previously haven't expected that. Not saying all the individuals in other generations haven't, but if we're generalizing and stereotyping here a little bit, the other generations just haven't expected that from the workplace. They've figured out how to get that other ways, or they've not gotten that, and they've had midlife crises. And so millennials are saying, I expect purpose. I expect connection. I expect growth from my workplace.
I actually really like that attitude. So do you have any... Listen, I have the same expectations. It makes no difference to me what I'm working on or who I'm working with. I want to be involved. I want the other person or company or team to be involved. I want us to all kind of dial in with the same goal in mind, and let's get this thing done and then move on to the next fire to stomp out, because there's always fires to stomp out. So I guess my question is here, you know, when companies are missing this kind of engagement with millennials, do you have any, and I know you've worked with a lot of people, do you have any kind of, you know, stories that you can tell about how you help people get around this and say, look, you've got a great employee there, but you're about to lose him or her. Let's try this. Do you have any case studies you can share?
Yeah, and what we normally do as an organization is we focus on empowering the leaders of the organization with the habits to lead their people better. So, and I mean habits because it's about acting. It's about doing something continuously, making it a pattern, a positive pattern in your life that you don't have to necessarily think about doing. You're just acting. And the habits that we focus on are listening with intention and attention, are asking powerful questions, communicating directly, holding critical conversations. So one of the teams I was working with, a leadership team of a fast-growing company, they're on Inc.'s 5,000, fastest-growing companies, and they're always listed as one of the best places to work. And we're working with their whole leadership team, and one of their leaders, he speaks, and the way he spoke to his team was, I want you to make mistakes. I'm caring about your growth and the way that you develop yourselves. And I trust you. But then when I sat down with him, I said, how are you showing that in your actions? When you get an email, are you responding to the email and solving the problem? Are you letting people solve the problems and make the mistakes on their own? Or are you taking care of it? He said, I'm taking care of it. And what that says to his team, what his actions say to his team are, he's one, not actually listening. He's not actually listening to what their needs are. And two, he's not trusting them to do the work themselves and make the mistake. When I do the work for you, Denise, without letting you accomplish it yourself, what I'm saying is I don't trust you to do it, so I'm going to do it the right way. And even though his words were, right, he was there in thought, he wasn't there in action, so he wasn't acting with integrity. And as soon as he realized this, and as soon as he realized that listening with intention, attention was the most powerful thing he could do, he went into his all-team meeting at the end of the week and just shut up and didn't talk. And that was his homework assignment. Shut up, don't talk, show up to that meeting, see what happens. Because he was usually the driver of that meeting, driving everything that happened. He left the meeting, and one of his key employees said to him, thank you so much. That was the best meeting we've ever had as a group. Thank you for letting us drive it. Thank you for letting that conversation go in the way it went. Thank you. And so the outcome was immediately employee appreciation, but more importantly, because we can talk about employee appreciation, but the end game is how do you be more productive as a business? Because if you're productive and you're a high-performing business, then you can keep your people. You can't keep your people if you're not performing. And what that also happened and what also was driven out of that conversation was a greater diversity of perspectives, greater idea sharing, because the leader wasn't the one in charge and saying what's happening. He was absorbing what was going on. He gave feedback and insights along the way, but he wasn't driving.
Now, how difficult was that for him? Because that's conditioning. I mean, this is the way he was taught. Look, I have the same problem with, or I did, I'm much, much better about it, with my own team. I mean, often it's just like, oh, geez, by the time I explain this, I could have done it myself. And let me tell you, that was a big struggle for me to step back and invite them in with their different perspectives, their different skills. We all have mad skills, every one of us. And even though I can do almost every single thing I ask my team to do, I shouldn't. Clearly, I shouldn't. But they're going to have a different approach to a lot of what I need. So I learned pretty late, well, about midway through my career, if you will, to stop creating these strict SOPs, standard operating procedures or protocols, and just ask my team, what would you do different? Do you have a different perspective? Oh, I like that. Or, no, let's go ahead and go with my idea, but maybe tweak it a little bit over here. But once I started giving them permission to just do, I'd set the task. I was very clear about what the end result was needed, but I didn't feel like I had to guide the middle. They could do what they needed to do. And all of a sudden, my time got real cleaned up. I didn't have to, second guess everybody or try to, corral them into my way of thinking. It was very liberating, I have to say.
And my guess and my wonder is, at some of those instances, Did somebody else figure out a way that might have been better, more efficient, more effective than the way you would have done it?
Yep. And it's not constant, but it's often enough that I go, okay. And this is why I say we all have mad skills. They work on my team because they have these great skills. It may be in WordPress. It may be in creating funnels. Could be anything. And while I can do it, you know, I'm not going to do it the way they do. And they'll come up with ideas that I'm just like, oh, that's great. Are we going to do it that way every time? No, because every single task is going to be different. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they come up with things that are shorter, easier, or more elegant. And I appreciate every bit of it.
And the thing is, it's about optimizing towards the end goal. So if they have an opinion, you have an opinion, you guys debate, and you come out at the end saying this is the best way to do it, regardless of whose idea it was, what was the best way to do it? That's all that matters. If we can check our egos at the door, check our politics at the door of being right or being wrong, who cares? Let's get to the best outcome. And if you're delivering,
exactly,
hey, this is the outcome we're trying to achieve, then let's work towards that and not say one person is bad or one person is good. And if we make a mistake, then let's learn from that to not do it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's how high-performing teams work. That's how high-performing companies succeed and excel.
And one thing I learned through this is that it was easy for me to just go, okay, you know, I'd hand off a piece of something. But once I read them in, so to speak, okay, this is the project. Here's pretty much an overview of the whole project. And I know that, you know, your piece is this. It's WordPress or it's databases or it's, you know, AWeber or Infusionsoft, whatever it's going to be. I still want you to know what the entire project's going to look like so you're not working in the dark. You're not trying to create something while you're sitting over here in a closet with a candle. You've got a big picture overview, and you can make suggestions and say, yeah, but I know I'm not working on this particular piece, but what about this thought or idea for that section of it? Because we all have wide-ranging skills. You know, I may have one contractor team member work on one thing, but once they're read into the whole big picture, the whole big goal, they have suggestions or ideas for other pieces of it, which is phenomenal.
And I love that you say that, because the truth is that even though I'm responsible for one piece of the puzzle, I need to know what the puzzle picture looks like. Imagine you're putting together a puzzle and you said, just figure out how that corner works. But I'm not going to give you what the picture is that we're trying to put together, even though you just figure out what that corner looks like. It's much harder to put the puzzle together. It's much harder to do it effectively and efficiently. And that's what we do as businesses, is we say, figure out the puzzle, but I'm not going to give you all of the clues because you don't need it. It's a waste of your time. You don't need to see the whole thing. You don't need to think about the big picture. That's what I do. And when that happens, it really limits the individual's ability to deliver the best outcome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very constricting. And I wasn't real bad about that in the beginning, but once I started realizing that, yeah, I'm one of those people, I can see the whole finished project in my head, and I work backwards from that. And it occurred to me that I'm not the only person that does that. So let's just give the whole big picture. And, you know, and sometimes, honestly, and I found this to be amazing, you know, one team member would say, okay, I've got the whole picture, but, you know, I can help on that one too if you don't have anybody already over in that section. Great, let's go for it. So it opens up different avenues where they can take their skills and step in and make a much better product instead of me trying to control everything. And I'm a bit of a control freak, I admit it. So I struggled with that. But once I let it go and said, look, you've got these people on board for a reason. Let them work in their zone of genius. Holy cow. It was a whole different business after that, and much easier on me.
Yeah, and probably more fun too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I get to collaborate with people who really are tops at what they do. And then we'll collaborate on some of their projects. Sometimes they'll pull me into theirs because they know that I've got skills that maybe they don't. So it's not just them working for me. They're working with me. And sometimes we're working together on different things that are not my projects. So it does open a lot of different, you know, arenas. And it opens up a lot of different ways to communicate and engage. You know, I love that word, engage. But you're right. So we have to be very open to not sitting at a desk and saying, okay, do this, do this, do this, don't do that. It doesn't work anymore.
Mm-mm. It really doesn't. Not with the type of work we're trying to do.
No. And now let's talk about remote workers. I mean, do you have any stories about remote workers, people who are not necessarily going into the office?
Yeah, one of my employees is right now, she's in Israel and has been for 4 months. And works on a different timeline and works in a different way. And yet what we do is we still make sure we engage in conversations. We make sure we FaceTime or Skype each other so that we can see each other's faces and check in. And we use technology to our advantage to make sure we communicate often and frequently. And we have ground rules. If she's going to email me or text me, she can do it at any time because she knows that I don't check my phone at night. So it's okay. Totally do it. Our ground rules are it's okay to send it at any time. If she's in the middle of the day, it's the middle of the night, my time, it's not a big deal because I'm not going to check it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to respond to it. And vice versa, she puts her do not disturb on her phone. And so we have that ground rule. And now if it was a different ground rule and they, you know, we checked our phones all the time, then we would say, you know what, let's set a timer on messages we send to each other to only send during these times of the day. And all that matters is that we establish ground rules for how we work with each other so that we know what works and what doesn't. And it makes it fun, it makes it easy, and it doesn't change the dynamic.
Right, right. And here's the thing, I think a lot of people are coming to realize that it's not, and I see this in the virtual assistance industry and the online business management industry, a lot of new VAs will say, well, you know, I've got to set hours. I've got to have so many hours for this client. No, what you need is to deliver. Whatever project or task you are going to deliver, you don't need to do it in 5 hours. If it takes you 1 hour, good. Deliver. Always deliver. You don't worry about the hours. And I think that's a big disconnect with remote workers. A lot of them are trying to be, you know, by their employer, heard it into, okay, I need you for 10 hours a week, and you must use your 10 hours a week. Well, yeah, but here's the thing. I only needed 3 hours to do that, so how about we do something different? I always tell people who are working remotely, you know, talk with the person who is tasking you with these things and say, I've got this done, but I've got this other great idea. Let's chat about it. You know, cooperate with one another. Try to figure out ways that you can be helpful to one another. I always tell people, in my industry, I am never just sitting at the end of the keyboard or the phone waiting for you to tell me what to do. In fact, it's often the other way around. I'm saying, okay, we've got this done, but how about if we add this form? Or how about if we, you know, this is a better way to get word out on social media marketing. So I don't worry about hours. I worry about deliverables. Does that make any sense?
That makes total sense. And it's not about swapping dollars for hours, it's swapping dollars for outcomes.
No.
As you
that's
just said.
Outcomes. Exactly. That's exactly right. And I think if more people were to say, okay, you know, yes, I appreciate it. I've got this 10-hour-a-week package or whatever it is. I don't work that way. But whatever it is. But here's the thing. I'm going to either need more time to finish this or I'm going to need less time, but I don't want you to feel like you're paying for things you're not getting. Let's try something else. And, you know, let me suggest something to you that can make your outcomes better. And those are the people who stay employed or under contract long term. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, no, it's spot on.
Okay, so traditional leadership training. Where do people go? I mean, I love that you're working with these big companies. Where can they go to find out that, you know, that old stuff doesn't really work? It may, or they may think it does, but once they, people who are in leadership roles who are just thinking, this isn't working, where do you tell them to go? What do you tell them to be looking for internally, externally, with their own mindset?
You know, one of the things is soft skills that I believe are the key leadership skills. Right? It's not learning how to run a meeting, that's important, but it's learning how to listen. It's learning how to ask the right questions. Those are transferable to so many different situations. Those skills aren't developed through an e-learning module. They're not developed by reading a book. They're not developed by watching a one-hour presentation. They're developed by practicing. So what I tell people to do is, yes, take a course, do some learning where you can learn how to do it, but look for the courses that have experiential components that are driven by practice so that you have to practice. And what we do is every module we do, it's 3 hours of a workshop with a group of leaders, and then they have a homework assignment, and then they have a coaching session, so that we're based on how do you move from knowledge to action? How do you build experiential into what you're doing? Because that's where habit comes in. That's how it starts to work. It's not about knowing what to do. It's about doing it. And if you're looking for training, if you're looking to develop yourself, look for the trainings that have experiential built in. Look for the trainings that force accountability on you, that make you do the work. You can't just sit back and learn this.
Now, so, and I agree with you about soft skills. I think they're, so important. I've always had a question, though, about whether soft skills are innate or can they be developed, and you're saying they can be developed.
Oh, no. Yeah, totally. I traditionally have been a terrible listener, terrible at asking powerful questions. It's held me back in my career. I've made a lot of mistakes as a result of it. And when I went through my coaching training, the skills I learned, I spent 200 hours of training on listening, asking powerful questions. And I wanted a list. I said, just give me the list of the right questions to ask, and I'll ask them. It's not about that. It's about being curious. It's about being open to different possibilities. And those are skills, just like any other, that you practice enough, you get good at, and you get really good at, and they become natural. And so I'm a firm believer that, yes, some people might have those skills naturally. Some people, I have friends that have just, my wife has a natural curiosity to her where she doesn't assume and she asks questions. And it's wonderful. I'm not that way, and I learned it. And it's something that I still practice every day. But because I practice it, I'm much better at it. And it's something I now have, and it's a strength of mine in my business, with my teams, and in the way I train other leaders.
That's fascinating. Can you give us some practice examples?
Sure. Here's the best example. When I'm in a meeting, and you can try this yourself when you're in a meeting or you're talking to somebody, and you assume you know what they're going to say, that's a key kind of reminder for me to say, what don't I know about this situation? What don't I know about what this person's going to say? Or what could I learn from this? Even if I think I'm hearing this for the 50th time, what's something new I can learn? And as soon as I kind of put that beginner's hat on, I open my mind, there's so much I learn, so much I figure out. It's when we start assuming that we get ourselves in trouble.
No kidding. Okay, so, and you're right. I mean, we can hear, here's my attitude about hearing something for the 50th time, and we all have. It's kind of, you know, when you're ready to hear it, when you're ready to learn it, there it is. You say, oh, geez, okay. You know, I've heard this 100 times before, but now it kind of resonates with me. Now I feel like I get it, and I can. This is information I can go do something with. So there's always that moment where you go, this is old news, but now it's fresh to me because of my current mindset. Do you find that happens quite a bit?
All the time. People aren't always, we're not always ready to soak it in. And the opportunity is to be ready more often. Is to not have to hear it the 50th time, but be open to it the 10th time. And if you're able to do that, think about how much more rapidly you can adapt, adjust, grow.
Perfect. And that does make sense. One of the things that I have noticed through my life is that if you don't have good listening skills, you're going to bumble through life a lot. You're going to walk into a lot of walls. And I have found, too, that some people simply don't know that they're walking into those walls. And I catch myself wondering, are you ever going to wake up and realize that people just are not listening to you, they're not paying attention, because you're a little bit bombastic. You're not, you know, you're almost hectoring people. So these, I would think, would be the people that really need to learn these lessons.
Yeah, and the truth is we all can practice them. We all can get better. I am by no means perfected any of these. And so I'm constantly learning, constantly reminding myself. You know, it's a constant practice.
Now, is this something that you do? You know, a lot of people have morning traditions that they get up and they start their day with. Is this something that you kind of include in your morning tradition, or is this just an ongoing kind of conversation reminder you have with yourself as each conversation occurs or each interaction occurs?
You know, I've practiced enough so that certain parts become habit, so that in the moment I can notice when I am not showing up listening to somebody or not showing up curious. Now, I don't recommend people try and start out by saying, let me notice in the moment. Actually, it's what most clients and most leaders say. Well, I'll just know when I'm doing it and I'll stop doing it. And I say that's the recipe for failure, because trying to figure it out in the moment is very, very, very hard. It's just a very hard practice. So I'm able to at this point. For a number of years, I wasn't. And the practice that I do now is I meditate daily. I wake up and I work out. And I take time to slow my mind down, to have that thoughtfulness, that deliberateness, that being, which enables me to notice more readily and to do something more readily. So, yes, I do have a daily practice which empowers me to be more prepared to listen. And I've practiced a lot so that I can do it in the moment. But I used to just set a reminder for myself at the end of the day and say, hey, how did I do in listening to somebody today? How curious was I on a scale of 1 to 10? And that was enough to give me intentionality for the rest of the day.
Right. Well, you mentioned earlier about, you know, people being in meetings with their cell phones or, you know, whatever, iPad, whatever it is. And listen, I hate that more than anything. If I have taken the time, I'm an introvert. It takes a lot to get me out of my house and go spend time with people. If I have taken the time to go be with you, you better put that cell phone down. And I'm very clear about that. Mine is off. It's in my purse. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to pick it up. And I also have another rule that when you're coming to my home for any kind of a gathering, Easter or Thanksgiving, whatever it is, either shut your phone off or leave it in the car, because you're not going to sit in my living room and be attached to whatever handheld device. You're going to be here to talk, chat, visit, drink wine, whatever it is that we're going to do. No phones. It's a completely different gathering once you ban those things.
Yeah, we start to interact with each other and are forced to interact with each other.
That's exactly right. So I guess my question is a roundabout way to get to a question is, why do people, when they're in public and they're yakking on their phone in a restaurant, and I don't know why they always do it at the top of their lungs, or they're with a business partner or whoever they're with, and they're so distracted. That's the best way to put it. You cannot be focused. You cannot be making good eye contact. You cannot be listening, actively listening, asking those good questions. Being curious is another phrase which I love. If you're focused on your phone, I think that is just incredibly rude. But beyond that, I think it's flat out stupid, I'll be honest with you. You're missing so many opportunities.
So you're wondering why do people do that?
I do. Do you have any ideas why people think this is acceptable behavior?
They don't think. It's automatic. It's habit.
Yeah.
We're conditioned in this way. And I mean, I'll be honest. I have made it like there's processes that we can set up in place to help us, and there's processes that we can set up in place to hurt us. I don't have alerts on my computer that pop up when I get an email. I don't, because that would distract me from anything else that's going on. I don't have them on my phone, so I don't know when emails come in. I have to go pull emails from my phone, or I even move the mail button into a separate folder so I don't even know where it is. I have to like search it on my phone, which just makes it a little harder for me to do, right? It makes the habit of checking my email much harder. The other thing, though, is I still can check it, and I can get into places and routines where I'm checking it frequently, right? And then checking it again and again and again. And that becomes a habit. It becomes an addiction. And so like any other habit, the more we practice it, the better we get at it. So the more we practice being on our phones or always having something to do or something to check or someone to respond to, that's second nature to us. To change that, to change that habit like any others, a lot of practice. And it's even harder because all of our surroundings and all the people around us usually have the same habit. And so habits aren't just born from our individual mindsets. They're born from everybody else around us. It's social contagion. If you have I think this is a stat. I might be butchering it. You have to look at Nick Christakis' work on social contagion, but I believe it's if you have a friend that's obese, you're 25% more likely to be obese. And the reason is because when you go out to dinner or lunch with that friend, there's a higher likelihood that you're going to pick someplace that might not be as healthy. And we have this social network effect that is really has a profound impact. Even 1 to 3 networks away that are connected to our network have an impact on how we interact with each other. And so if everybody's on their phone, well, then it's even if I know it's not the right thing to do, if I'm with everybody, I'm going to check my phone. I'm going to be completely honest with you, Denise. I will check my phone. If there's 5 other people that I'm sitting with and they're all checking their phone at the same time, I'm not going to just sit there and look around, right? And so that's the habit that we get ourselves into, and it's not an easy one to break. I hope I'm not speaking like these are clear, simple things to do. They're not easy to do. They take work. They take practice. They take dedication. But
and awareness. You have to be aware that you're doing it.
That's the first step. That's the first step to habit change, is you have to be aware, and then you have to know what you want to do different. And if you have those, you have steps in the right direction, right? It's like setting a New Year's resolution. That's a step in the right direction, but we don't accomplish it because we don't then do the practice and the work and figure out how to change things.
Exactly. I'll be very frank with you. I have been known, I've done this once, where I was out with friends. All of them were on their phone. Nobody was talking with each other. I got up and left. I didn't say a word. I just left. Got in my car. My phone was off because it was in my purse. Got home. And I have all these messages. What happened? Where did you go? Why did you leave? Are you serious? Not one of you was speaking to me or each other. Why in the world would I stay there? I mean, I was really, I was just not going to tolerate it.
Yeah, we my friends and I, when we all go out to dinner, I wouldn't say this is every time we do it, but we've done this a couple of times, is we have either like a box that we, like a to-go box that we put all our phones in, and the first person to grab their phone is paying for dinner. Or we just say, hey, all our phones are in this to-go box, and let's just have dinner. And those have been some of the best dinners, best nights that we have together, so we're not checking anything else.
Exactly. You're making eye contact. You're, interacting with each other. You're engaging with each other. You're enjoying the moments. And those are soft skills, too, looking at each other, talking with each other, asking questions, listening. So you can maybe learn it at the dinner table. I don't know. Well, Erin, this has been a fascinating conversation. So what I need to find out from you before we end is, where can people find you on the web?
Yeah, so our website is www.raisebar.co. That's RAISEBAR.co. And my email is erin@raisebar.co. So if you're interested in what we're talking about, we actually have a course open for August, where we have leaders come from all different places and all different shapes and sizes to come together to build and develop these leadership habits. And so our course in Chicago in August, but anybody is open to apply and be a part of it.
Excellent. Erin, thank you. It has been truly a pleasure speaking with you today, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And there's a lot of takeaways. I was scribbling as you were talking. I've got to write that one down. So before we say goodbye, though, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. And be sure to listen to this in your car, wherever you are, because there's a lot of great information that Erin has shared. Erin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Denise. Have a great day.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.